You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses. But we do know that if you don't use two trebles, and you use something with a single hook, or just one treble, you're not going to kill many fish. At all. At all. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Guidepost. We got a little rapid reaction here. Will Poston is actually at the hearing in Virginia. They just walked out of the striped bass management board about 10 minutes ago. Before we get into that, we're kind of just going to go in order of the meetings. There was a drum management board yesterday that was looking at progress updates on red drum, Atlantic croaker, spot, all those benchmark stock assessments. I guess they're still on track. Not a lot to report. We're really going to have to wait for those stock assessments to come out. Some of the species aren't doing great, but I really kind of hate to really dive into it until the stock assessment comes out. Following up on the drum board was the Atlantic Menhaden Management Board. It was not a real heated meeting, but there was one thing to note. A report on the acoustic survey of overwintering Atlantic menhaden offshore. Will and I were talking before we hit record on this thing, and it looks like there'll be some implications on the stock assessment. Will, do you want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I hope my audio sounds good and people aren't too distracted. I found as quiet of a little corner as I could here in the Westin in Crystal City in between ASMFC meetings. But anyways, at the Menhaden board meeting, there was a report by Jenny at Chesapeake Bay Laboratories discussing some of her work from back in 2022, in which she surveyed overwintering menhaden off New Jersey. So pretty much from Hudson Canyon to Delaware Bay. And, you know, right off the bat, this was an interesting survey because a lot of the stock assessment people and people that work on menhaden, you know, they assumed that it was a migratory population that really overwintered in off the Carolinas and further south. So right off the bat, it was kind of affirming what a lot of people have been seeing on the water these past couple of years, that there are, in fact, an overwintering population in New Jersey. But kind of more important for the management implications and just science, her study was using acoustic technology. So, you know, think about your most powerful sonars and down sounders and what have you. And she was able to compare that to commercial catches using midwater trawl gear and more or less estimate the actual biomass of these menhaden schools, you know, through that comparison. So super cool work. And, you know, we'll be kind of awaiting to see how, you know, this survey design might be able to, you know, make its way into the stock assessment. I know there was some talk about they in conjunction with the like local abundance estimates off Jersey, they did some biological sampling too. So, you know, better kind of honing in on age structure and size at maturity and things like that, that will have implications in the upcoming menhaden assessments, plural. In 2025, we will get a new ecological reference point survey for menhaden and their single species assessment update. So a lot going on in menhaden, and it'll be really cool to see how, you know, some of this this distinct population abundance estimates might find its way into you know, other species, other regions, what have you. But, you know, I'll be sure to look out for links and such in a meeting rundown blog, because it's some really cool work. I mean, they found, let me check my notes right here, the menhaden biomass off Jersey was 17 to 24 million pounds in the overwintering time period. So a lot of pogies out there, and kind of disrupted what was previously thought of for this species. So again, interesting. We'll see where it takes us.
More science, better science, right? I mean, that's kind of the way we have to look at all of this. So that really closed out. There was a law enforcement committee meeting, horseshoe crab discussion yesterday. And then today, Coastal Pelagics Management Board met and draft addendum 2 was approved for public comment for cobia. So
do you want me to kind of go through those options, Tony?
Yeah, I mean, I think
just
I
high
think
level.
The big takeaway is that, you know, we're gonna get that addendum, educate the public, and if you fish for cobia, give you an opportunity to comment on it. But, you know, well, what should people be looking out
for? Yeah, so my main takeaway, I think, from the need for the board to kind of look at this is, you know, we all know the recreational data challenges, and they are so much more acute in with a species like cobia. That's, you know, it's a pulse fishery. It's relatively a rare event species, and it's predominantly targeted inshore, offshore, but not by shore anglers, right? So MRIP does a pretty awful job at capturing that. And it's also one of these species, right, that is, its range is, you know, in the recent years has been expanding. So it is frustrating current management strategies. So this draft addendum is going to look at new allocation schemes for the recreational sector. So obviously status quo will be an option. Then there is a state by state quota option and a regional option. And, you know, we don't have to go too far in the weeds on these, but definitely kind of different implications, no matter which way you look at it. But, you know, ASGA will be diving in and trying to reach out to some of our cobia stakeholders to see, you know, what makes the most sense for this fishery and this stock to, you know, ensure that we're, you know, trying to keep it sustainable.
So there was also a white paper on Spanish mackerel. For those of y'all that aren't following along with Spanish mackerel, the stock assessment didn't pass peer review. And it was kind of back to the drawing board, and they produced, they had meetings all through North Carolina, port meetings, and about a little over 150 attendees. They got some feedback on that.
This is probably a good plug too for our New England friends. There will be Spanish mackerel port meetings later this month. I think it was May 14th through the 16th. Yeah. And those will be virtual. So, you know, Tony, I'm sure we can link those meetings in the recap blog as well. And, you know, maybe have a social post. I know those Macs have been making their way up to the Cape the past few summers. So, you know, there might be some people interested in sharing their input, right?
Yeah. Florida still, you know, harvests the lion's share. I think it was 44% coastwide for Florida. You know, we see them obviously a lot in the bay for a very limited amount of time, and they're starting to pop up in a lot of other places, but it's a super valuable fish. Not one that I see enough, but they sure as heck are fun to catch.
And they taste good, too, I will say.
Yeah, they're just slap your mom and delicious. you know, very, very underrated fish, in my opinion. but we also don't get the teeny tiny ones like the 12, 14, 16 inchers. We kind of get the larger models up here. So, well, to each his own. And that brings us to striped bass. So, the beginning of the striped bass meeting, we had the compliance reports from Maryland, Potomac Rivers Fisheries Commission in Pennsylvania. Those compliance plans were approved. So, you know, it was one of those games of chicken that Maryland wanted to play. And I think they came to the realization that this was a very, very bad, it was like a Ford F-350 with the brakes went out coming at the chicken, and they decided not to play.
I was joking with some commissioners and other people in the room. I was like, you know, as much as I would have liked to see, you know, as entertaining as it would have been to see a showdown over these implementation plans, this meeting was a lot easier. And I'm glad, you know, we don't have to have that fight and can look towards the stock assessment and getting this fishery, rebuilt. You know, it almost turned into a huge distraction, right?
I mean, that's all a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's almost like sleight of hand.
Yeah.
Kick the can down the road, distract, let us keep killing and abusing the resource for as long as possible while we gain the system. So they complied. That's okay. You know, there were some questions with it, but to be honest, you know, there's bigger fish to fry, pun intended, right now. So then we got into Mike Armstrong presenting some of the findings. Then we got into Mike Armstrong coming into some of the findings. Preliminary results from the post-release mortality study that Mass DMF has been doing and getting data from our partners at Got One app. You know, it didn't tell us anything that was shocking, but it told us a lot. And, you know, many things jumped out at me with this. But the first thing is that the 9% wasn't too terribly far off at all. However, when you start breaking it down between lure choices, lure types when you're fishing, and bait versus lures, I'd say it was pretty significant. If you are choosing, I'm just going to go in order. If you are choosing to fish with a fly, you're at about 3% mortality.
Well, Tony, we should also just caution or condition this as Mike did, right? Like, this is all based on the samples that they have collected, which from Mike's point of view was from a rather experienced kind of hardcore group of anglers, right? So this is all based on the citizen science data that they have right now. I just think that's important for the listeners to know, right? Like, it's not like a hard mortality rate.
Well, what I would say to counter that is that the Diodati study in big bold letters on the bottom said, do not use this for management purposes.
Yeah, that is also
and
fair.
So we've been using that for 34 years. So I think that there's something to be said for this. And, you know, look, you get who you get, right? When you do these studies and you're looking for citizen science, the people who are going to know about the study and participate in it are probably going to be your better anglers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is what it is. So going by lure type, 3% fly, 3.5% midwater lure, 3.6% mortality bottom lure, 5.6 surface, and 6.8 bait. You know, the hook type, single hooks 3-3, two single hooks 4-4, and you really see a jump when you go treble, it's 8.1. The eel, when you get into different baits, when people were using live or dead bait was considerably higher for projected mortality, and eel and mackerel were pretty high as well when considered, you know, like a tube and worm was like a little over 2%, but an eel was 8.5%. So I guess, you know, my thoughts on this are, well, we'll get into my thoughts on this in a second. But we have the science now to inform us.
Do you want to quickly walk back and just kind of, so like, I just wanted to add, you know, so the first thing MassDMF did, right, was the circle hook study, where they put accelerometers on it. So they kind of ground truthed everything based on that study. And then in their phase two, they deployed the citizen science, which, you know, jacked up their sample size by, you know, 100x magnitude. So they're kind of taking this condition score that they developed in the first part of this effort and then applying it over the broader picture of, you know, recreational anglers supplying their data. So that I just wanted to kind of lend to this discussion, you know, how we're getting to these numbers, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, there's obviously a lot more to it.
Yeah.
Even than that. But I think, you know, what we're talking about now is a pretty big question mark about, you know, what are the real conservation benefits of circle hooks? Because when you look at like a billfish and the way that they eat, circle hooks are incredibly effective. Probably did more for billfish conservation than a lot of other things.
I was just going to say, and that was another interesting discussion that we heard, right, that not all circle hooks are created equal. You know, obviously an offset circle hook is not a circle hook. That's a J hook, right? But even going into inline circle hooks, the distance of the hook gap or the length of the hook gap can potentially be the factor, can be a huge factor in this question about the efficacy of a circle hook. So the smaller the hook gap, you know, Armstrong was kind of alluding to the fact the theory that that could further increase the efficacy of, you know, circle hooks finding that jaw.
That opens up a whole other can of worms, with, you know, how do you get manufacturers just to make one circle hook for striped bass?
Yep.
The bottom line is circle hooks, no matter what the reason or what the theory is, they're not as effective for striped bass as they are for billfish. And it's not some silver bullet. And it didn't lower. So I participated in the circle hook study in the late 90s in the Chesapeake Bay. And what they determined from that study was that there was no difference between single hook artificials and circle hook with bait. I would say that has been soundly disproven. And you know, when you get back to the citizen science condition scores, mortality rates, you know, bait dead was 8%. And again, single hook was 3%. That's 2.5 times what a single hook is. So it is not the same.
Yeah. It makes sense too, right? Like if you're fishing chunks, it's going to be a lot easier for that for that hook to get way deep than if you're fishing a full mackerel or a full bogey.
Well, I mean, mackerel was higher. Mackerel was 8.2% and dead bait was 7.8.
I must have misheard that then at the end of that discussion.
Yeah, mackerel, the highest was eel at 8.5. I mean, I have the benefit. I took a screenshot. It's not like my memory is infallible here. And I'm looking at the chart, so don't take anything negative by that. But by bait species, mackerel 8.2, eel 8.5. By bait type, live, and this is across the board, so this includes menhaden and other shit. Bait was live bait was 5.1, dead bait was 7.6. Okay, but again, when you hone down to the specifics of a mackerel or an eel, they were well above 8%, and everything with a single hook, the highest one with a single hook was 3.6%. So I think that really tells us a lot. And right now, if we're averaging 9% and everyone is truly concerned about catch and release mortality rather than just keeping us off the water so their select few friends can kill more fish, what I'm seeing is that we could lower mortality shockingly. If we actually take the science that MassDMF used and deploy it. So, I mean, I don't know really what more to say about that. Then I guess right from there, they got into a discussion about creating a work group to discuss release mortality, because this is we're the devils in the room. It has nothing to do with about overestimating striped bass fishing effort by possibly 40% or not lowering any commercial quotas for going on 11 years in the Chesapeake Bay. Nope. We're the demons. It's us. Yep. 3% mortality. Yeah. Whew. Man, it's tough being the devil. So anyway, we had potential working group questions for to address catch and release mortality. So here they are. There's three bullet points. Review existing non-targeting closures, including any information on impacts to striped bass catch and effort, as well as their enforceability. Bullet point two, review MassDMF discard mortality study and other relevant reports to evaluate the efficacy of potential gear modifications. And number three, identify assessment sensitivity runs, which may inform board discussion around release mortality, e.g., how low would you have to reduce release mortality in order to see a viable reduction in removals with the same level of effort? So, Will, you want to go through the timeline of this work group? I think you were paying a little bit more attention at that point than I was.
Yeah. So
just remember, we'll go through this. We're going to frame this. Stock assessment coming out in October.
Yes.
So
right now, the board approved the establishment of a work group. And over the next, 2 weeks or a month, they will send a survey out to the striped bass board members who will offer their own services to join this work group. So, who wants to volunteer on the striped bass board and join the work group? And there was an interesting discussion, what should we open up this work group to the striped bass advisory panel? And we learned that commission work groups have to remain with that specific FMP's board. So a little bit of an aside, but anyways, there will be one work group meeting before the summer Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission meeting. And, they'll kind of try to touch on as many of these subjects as they can and report back at that meeting. It didn't sound like they're going to be able to really dive into these sensitivities in terms of quantifying catch and release savings for the assessment at that meeting. It sounds like that that information is going to take a little bit longer, and we can probably expect that in later this fall at the annual meeting.
Like, kind of all of this, there's so many unknowns. We don't know what the stock assessment is going to say. I guess there's a feeble chance that it could show a slight uptick because the 2015s are recruiting, have recruited, and then to the SSB, and then you may have, I don't know. I mean, you may have some of the 2017s, which was an average year class. You may have some of them start recruiting. Maybe. So we might see a slight uptick, but that does not change the fact that we have five absent years coming up. And I think the board's probably going to recognize that.
And that, Tony, that's a discussion point. You know, I heard in just some sidebar conversations today, right? Just you and I have heard it a million times, and I'm sure podcast listeners have as well. The Maryland Young of the Year Index is the gold standard of projecting a future striped bass abundance. It has never been wrong.
It is not wrong. I mean, people can, there are other places. They're here, they're there. Will, I think there's 1,500 separate net sets. I mean, look at the map. Go to Maryland DNR, look at Young of the Year, Google Maryland DNR, Young of the Year Survey, Striped Bass, and they have a map with the net sets in all the major spawning rivers, and you tell me how it's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been going on since the late 1950s, early 1960s. Like, it is the indicator. So, you know, these ding-dongs that are, the striped bass moved to Nova Scotia, they're putting them in the wrong place. Dude, we listened to a gill netter in effing Delaware say that some of his striped bass and his gill nets had myco. Well, and it was because of an overpopulation of striped bass. I mean, is this the best that Delaware can do? Is this the best that Delaware, like the people on the board, when every shred of science says that we're fixing to fall off a cliff and we haven't been close to target in God knows how long, a month of Sundays, we got to listen to a gill netter say that myco is prevalent in his fish that he's killing. And that's because there's too many of them. Now, why don't you ask Delaware anglers that? Because you don't have any anglers anymore in Delaware, for the most part, except on the Jersey side. That fishery has collapsed, has utterly collapsed. And did they mention that they expanded the range of the gill nets? Did they mention that? Because there aren't very many stripers and they're having a hard time catching their quota that they're fighting tooth and nail to increase. I mean, Delaware has to do better. It's big of an abomination as Maryland. And to listen to that ridiculous stupidity is probably more than I can take. And look, I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say this. And I don't care. I don't care at this juncture with striped bass. There is a study going on right now in Maryland that's looking at the potential for new strains of mycobacteriosis that are more virulent than the ones that we know about. And I've been begging them to publish this for going on 8 months now. And I'm not going to say who it is, and I'm not going to call anyone out, but like, that's what's going on. That's what's going on. They're not overpopulated, dunderhead. There is a great potential that we have a new strain of myco that might double natural mortality in the bay from 12.5% to 25%. None of that is certain, but I'm sick of waiting. I don't care anymore. I don't care. Don't ever talk to me again if you listen to this, scientist, if that's how it is. But there's no There's no absolute findings. There's no peer review. There's nothing out like that. But I know it's coming out because this is my job. And I'm telling you right now, you can throw that log on the fire, striped bass. We got problems. And these fools, you know, want to do things like institute a 2-week no targeting closure so they can put bullshit numbers in a chart and say, look, we're helping, like the Simpson kid with his finger up his nose. I'm helping, you know, I'm sure everyone's seen that kid. When like they need to be looking at this mass DMF study, we need to be changing how we fish based on that study, right? And we need to be paying attention to the stock assessment because you've mismanaged this stock. We've been screaming about this since, you know, 2014, 15. So for the last 10 years, you've done the bare minimum and we brought you along kicking and screaming to conservation. And now your answer is to gain the system. You know, well, we're going to do a 2-week no targeting closure and that's really going to help. So like, Will, the other thing on the mass DMF study was the over 75 degrees. Over 75 degrees thing. So it's really brilliant of Maryland to shut April and the first 15 days of May down where I can't even look at the bay or I'll get a ticket, right? When the water's like still really cold, you know, and oh, that, let me tell you, that 2-week closure in August, the Maryland portion of the bay from, let's, I don't know, it's different every year. Maybe it's July 4th. Maybe it's a little bit later. And then, you know, maybe for like the first 2 weeks of September, trust me, it's over 75 degrees. Trust me, the water temperature. And it's not ocean salinity. And a lot of people are using bait. So,
you know, Tony, that brings up a great point. And, you know, I know some of those researchers at MassDMF have, you know, they've been looking to expand the survey, and it's a great opportunity for, you know, any anglers in the Mid-Atlantic and the Bay region to go download Got One. And if you catch striped bass over the summer, upload it or opt into the MassDMF study through Got One and further enhance this work. And, you know, the other thing I wanted to touch on, because, you know, we're not at the point yet where there are hard management options about including no targeting closures. That's not there yet, but clearly through this working group, it's still on the board's mind. You know, whether that goes through and whether that's quantifiable at all is, you know, anyone's best guess. But, you know, everyday anglers can still go to this MassDMF website where the Shiny app is, and, you know, make your own determinations. Like, you know, do I really need to be catching and releasing 30 fish using bait, you know, when you know that potentially has a greater impact on mortality? Or should you, you know, if you want to keep one fish, okay, there, catch it with bait and then switch over to a single hook artificial lure. And, you know, there are kind of voluntary options that, you know, the everyday angler can glean from this work. And, you know, again, it might not be show up in the data and in the stock assessment in terms of actual savings, but the MassDMF data that we're seeing, you know, it'll definitely reduce your impact on this stock. And I think that's a good takeaway home message for, you know, just again, the everyday angler who cares about this fishery.
Yeah. And we're absolutely going to do a blog on the MassDMF study to try to train anglers up this season on what they can do. Because, you know, we've said it before and we'll say it again, there's no better conservation community for fish on the planet than the striped bass community. And I think all we need to know is what is the right thing to do. And I think a lot of people are going to do that because they do actually care about the fish. And if they're releasing it, they absolutely want it to survive. So it's kind of their gift to the next fisherman that catches it. You know, but when I look at things like a single treble, or a single hook, artificial, has a release mortality of 3%. I mean, right there, if we told you, you know, Will, if I said, if I wore a pink tutu, fishing for striped bass, and I could effectively lower my catch and release mortality by 200% from 9% to 3%, you would unfortunately see pictures of me on the web wearing a pink tutu. You know, so what we're saying is we're not 100% sure circle hooks work. That has not been decided yet. But we do know that if you don't use two trebles and you use something with a single hook or just one treble, you're not going to kill many fish at all.
Definitely. I know I've been taking the tail trebles off some of my big plugs. All my docks now have either singles or just the belly treble. Same goes for some of my SP minnows, and you can kind of, you know, tweak things to get the weighting right. You know, you can get some of those beefier inlines that are more or less the same weight as, you know, what the comparable treble would be. You know, there are things you can do, and there's a lot of good resources online where some of those serial tinkerers, I guess, are really kind of looking at, you know, how you can change tackle to, you know, maintain the action of the plugs.
Here's a teaser for probably an announcement next week, but we have been working with prominent lure manufacturer and have some exciting news about what they're going to do in response to this new scientific information. And you know, all I can say is the people who really care lead the way, just like the Got One app, like we're doing collecting data on now multiple species, and working with our partners to make changes where, you know, hopefully other folks will see these changes and be compelled to make them as well. But more on that next week. So Will, I mean, I think that pretty much like wraps everything up. Our position as the Guides Association is going to be simple, and it's going to be follow the science. And we're not going to, you know, bow to any pressure, be shamed into, you know, some ridiculous thing. Two-week targeting closure in New Hampshire where the water never gets to 70 degrees. We saw the chart in Massachusetts. You know, there's no reason to do it other than to penalize people. It's not enforceable. It's not quantifiable. Basically penalize our guides. But what we're going to do is stick to the hard facts. That water temperature is over 75 degrees and you're fishing with bait. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. You should not, I repeat, you should not be allowed to do that if the water's over 75 degrees, because pretty much the bulk of what you're catching is going to die. And that's based on science, not pretend conjecture, nothing like that. And the only way that we're going to bring this stock back, they have done such a terrible job managing it. The only way that we're going to bring it back is to act on these things and make the changes and be a leader in conservation as we move forward. Because, I mean, if it isn't clear to everyone else, it's certainly clear to us that, you know, we have to take the lead role on these issues, because, you know, it's a lot of times with these folks, it's too little too late. You know, they push things to the edge and then turn around and go, well, how did that happen? Well, I can tell you. So we're going to watch this work group really, really carefully. And listen in on the calls if they allow us to. I think they probably have to. and let everyone know how it's going, and pay an awful lot of attention on the stock assessment calls coming up.
It's all heating up, man.
So listen, go out and catch some fish. They're showing up in a lot of different places now. Go kick off your season. We got our finger on the pulse of this. Will, thank you for joining me. And we'll see everyone on the next guidepost.
See you guys.